It's great to have you with us from wherever you're tuning in from. For more information about Elevate Church or to contact us, head to our website elevatechurch.me and take us wherever you go by downloading our Elevate Church AU app. We hope this message inspires and helps you to take your next steps in your journey.
Good morning. Actually, I haven't preached for 3 weeks, so I really hope I remember how. I guess we're about to find out, right? Yeah. Everyone's like, geez, it better. I paid a lot of money to be here. Speaking of which, early in the month, we like to celebrate what God's doing through us to reach people from the digital space, people that aren't necessarily here or even living in Perth as such, because the great news is in 2024, all that we see when we come together isn't all that there is. So we have our online experience, and that's literally running now. That goes on live every Sunday, 10 a.m., and then it's available on demand after that. And then we have our podcast. So each of the messages that we preach here live on a Sunday get recorded, and then we push them out around midday on the Sunday. And this last month, February, I know, seems like a long time ago, February, we had listeners join in our podcast from 18 countries, which is not a record, but it's close. And we have a new number one. Hello. Start with number three. Number three in the month of February was Singapore. So those of you joining us from Singapore, I really hope you survived Taylor Swift's takeover of your fantastic island nation. She's gone now. And number two was Australia. Perhaps you've heard of it. Speaking of an island nation. And then a new number one is the land of my forefathers, France. So, bienvenue to our friends from France. Vive la France. How about we welcome everyone joining us this morning on our podcast from wherever you are. Now, I want to take you back to Monday this week. Monday this week, my week started not completely weirdly, but slightly weirdly. When I got up and I got around to checking my phone, there were three text messages on my phone from numbers that I didn't recognize. The first one was a very friendly and helpful reminder letting me know that if I clicked this link and input my address details, they would be able to ensure that the package that I'd ordered would arrive at the correct address, which is very helpful, except for the fact that I haven't actually ordered a package. Block. The second one was another helpful text message letting me know that with the package that I'd ordered, if I click this link, which the link looked like a distant cousin of the website for Australia Post, that threw a few extra dollars because I apparently have underpaid for shipping, and they're not going to be able to deliver the package that I didn't order unless I stumped up a few extra dollars for the shipping block. Third one was a very helpful reminder letting me know that my toll, T-O-L-L, my toll payment was overdue and that I should pay it immediately, which is hilarious because firstly, I don't own a car. Secondly, we don't have tolls here in Perth. So, you know, block. All right. That was Monday. I had another one like these Tuesday morning, different phone number. Lots of very helpful people sending you text messages these days. Wednesday, offer of a lifetime, I got an email from a very sweet lady who let me know if that I replied to her with my address, she would donate to me her late husband's grand piano. Hello. Now, this is like the 13th time she sent me this very same email. Apparently, her husband's been dead a lot of times over the last 4 years, and he's died again recently. Louis told me just last week that she got locked out of her Facebook account because someone had tried to hack that. And Louis's like, why would someone try to hack my Facebook account? I'm like, sweetheart, it's called identity theft. They're looking for just pieces. You're not going to volunteer everything. Here's my passport number. Here's my driver's license. Here's my date of birth. But scattered across the interwebs is all of that information in pieces. And some very smart people, some very bad actors are trying to grab all of that and stitch it together and steal your identity. Now, some intrepid Canadian journalist actually stumbled across this breaking news story that $43 million in cash was recently found in an empty Nigerian apartment. And some comment was, well, poor guy probably spent the last decade trying to share it, but no one ever replied to his emails. So there you go, people. You thought it was a scam. Turns out it was not. So you missed out. Spam used to refer to a very cheap and questionable type of tinned meat product. Now we've got spam and we've got scams, and they are prolific. Some people even say this, don't quote me, but that identity theft is currently the number one crime in the world. Don't quote me on that. Whether or not it's number one, it's high and it's rising. So much so that this week was the international Identity Theft Fraud Summit in London, where ministerial representatives from all around the world came. It's a thing, people. When someone has a summit, it's a thing. Yeah, all right. And here's the thing about identity theft is the challenge isn't only protecting your stuff, like the $2.50 that someone wanted me to pay so my package would arrive. People didn't just don't want your $2.50. They also want to steal who you are. And the thing about identity theft, and I pray this doesn't happen to you, but if it ever happens to you, it can take years to actually finally get all of the pieces back together. Because here's the great irony. You need to verify your identity with stuff that's been stolen from you. Hello. Anyway. That's not the point of the message today, but I was certainly thinking about God's identity and whether or not somehow we, any one of us, have ever kind of co-opted or other people have co-opted God's identity. So let's just have a little thought experiment. Just take a moment to think of anywhere between one and five words, if you even believe in God, but just let's play hypothetically. If you do believe in God, between one and five words that you might use to describe God. Just now, I hope some of you thought of love. Church veterans, love. You know that's the correct answer. Elevate kids, they know that's the answer that's going to get them the treat. Love. Yeah, God is love. Great. But can we just be a bit honest here this morning now? Like, that's the church veteran answer. That's the correct answer in Elevate Kids. But I wonder if some of you maybe had the words disappointed, indifferent, angry, distant. And if some of you said love, or some of you said some things that maybe are not so shining, how do we even know if the identity that we have pictured in our minds is actually correct or not? So, if God was to have to prove his ID, what would he say? What would he tell us who he is? So I just want to show you a little slice of God in his own words. If you've got your smartphone camera, you can scan this. It's going to take you back to the second book of the Bible, Exodus. It's going to take you to chapter 34. And this is literally a slice of how God describes himself. In fact, if you're looking for your next book idea to write, I'm about to show it to you. You can call it God in His Own Words. Okay? There you go. Give me 10% commission on all sales made. This is God literally in His Own Words. God Himself says this to Moses, the Lord. He's like, that's me, the God of compassion and mercy. I am slow to anger and filled with unfailing love and faithfulness. Now, I just tell you from my vantage point, I'd take any one of them. If even just one of those was true, let alone five, that would be a game changer. And I wouldn't even vote. I'd just get a dart and I'd throw it, and whichever one it hit, good. God of unfailing love, I'll take it. The God of faithfulness, yep, that'll do. But what if all five of these things that God says are true about himself, who he kind of should know, what if they were true, all of them? How much would that be a game changer? And to give you an idea of how important this is to God, to try and get it across to us, this very statement is referenced over 20 more times as you work your way through the Bible. It's kind of an idea as if God's saying, all right, in case you missed it the first time, let me hit you with it again and again and again and again. When you're disappointed, please read this. Because one of the mistakes we can make is we can start framing who God is based on our experiences, right? And I understand that. I'm disappointed. God must be indifferent. I did something wrong, and I'm not even sure I can ask God for his forgiveness. I bet he's angry. And God says, okay, listen, I'm your loving father. Let's go back to this. Let's make this the jump off point for who you are. So in the run up to Easter, which is in 2 weeks, three Sundays, including today, I just want to tackle a few of these. We won't get time to hit all of them, but I want to start with the one that God started with. And I just wonder if this is going to be some of the most important news some of you need to hear today, that God is a God of compassion. Now, this word compassion used here has the same root word as the word womb, as in a woman's or mother's womb. And for God to use that same word, it's almost as if he's saying, I have the same desire to fiercely protect you and defend you exactly the same way as a loving mother would fiercely defend you and protect you. I heard a story this week. A number of years ago, the guy telling the story was just saying he was playing a game of pickup basketball with some of his mates. And there was two brothers in the mix. One of them was on one team, one was on the other. And the older brother on the other team was kind of trash-talking the younger brother. And apparently he was a bit extra. Like, you know, trash-talking is one thing, but this guy apparently was like PhD level trash-talking his younger brother. And as this pickup game was going on, in one particular moment, the younger brother just kind of froze on the court and his eyes started rolling back in his head and he just slumped to the ground. And the older brother sprinted over and grabbed him and scooped up his head and cradled his head in his hands so it wouldn't hit the concrete surface. And all of the other guys around playing this pickup basketball game, they'd never seen an epileptic seizure before. So they're just standing around, as you'd imagine, looking and wondering what on earth is actually happening here. This is just like wild. And the older brother, whilst standing hunched over his younger brother, cradling his head, said to the guys gathered around, listen, he said, my brother's going to come to in a few moments. And when he does, I think it'd be like cool if you all weren't standing around looking at him. And so maybe how about you'll just go to the other end of the court and just shoot around so he doesn't have to come to with that. And that's not a perfect example, but that is certainly, when I heard that story, an incredibly powerful example of what compassion looks like. Compassion doesn't stand around pointing the finger. Compassion doesn't make fun. Compassion doesn't just feel. That's empathy, which is a good start. Compassion does. Compassion responds. And the biggest truth I want you to take away today is from God himself, that God has compassion for you. So let's keep drilling into this. And I'm just going to use God's own words to really make the point here this morning. God said through a prophet, this prophet's like a spokesperson. This guy's name's Isaiah. Can a woman forget her nursing child? Well, sometimes you read about stories in the parking lot where they have, but apart from those, can a woman forget her nursing child that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? Well, even if these may forget, yet I will not forget you. Now, I've never given birth to a human. I'm sort of speaking a little bit out of my lane here. So mothers, correct me if I'm wrong. But my understanding is that those of you who are mothers, when Junior was 4 months old, there was never a time where Junior was in their cot, in their room, and Junior thought to themselves, it's 2 a.m. and I'm really hungry right now, but Mum's been working pretty hard looking after me. She's pretty tired right now, I could tell, when she put me to bed. So you know what? I've heard about this thing called intermittent fasting. Maybe I'll take this opportunity to give that a shot. It's pretty in vogue right now. And I'm just going to let Mum sleep. In fact, I'm not going to make a single noise. I'm just going to put up with the hunger pangs, and Mum can just wake up when she naturally feels like it and come in and give me another meal. Again, I'm not speaking from firsthand experience, but pretty sure that's not how these things work. And incidentally, as well, again, correct me if I'm wrong, a loving mum, when Junior is at 2 a.m. screaming because Junior's hungry and isn't deciding to take up intermittent fasting, doesn't walk in and say, listen, I mean, she might think these thoughts, but I'm just saying, best case scenario, keeps them to herself. Listen, all you've done all day is pee and poop and eat and scream and sleep, and now it's 2 a.m. and you expect me to give you more food? Now, again, Mum may have had those thoughts, but if Mum, those are the don't say them out loud thoughts, but if Mum like said the quiet parts out loud, it'd be like, that's not right. That's not compassion. And one of the key things about compassion and one of the superpowers about God's compassion is He doesn't always give us what we deserve. Which is not a non-issue if you've done well. Like, give me what I deserve. It's a big issue if we've let ourselves down or let God down. God doesn't actually act based on what we deserve. He acts based on the value He has for us. Just like Mum getting up at 2 a.m. Junior doesn't deserve that sort of treatment, but Junior is intensely valued by Mum. Can a woman forget her nursing child? I will not forget you. Slightly mixing the metaphor, God comes out with this one. If you can't relate to the woman in the womb, let's try this one. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. Don't get too freaked out by the word fear. It means sort of respect and honor there. So again, God's trying to highlight in another way, in case you missed it, I have compassion. This is like the father who goes and sees Junior's sports game and Junior misses the goal that would have seen their team win, and Dad's on the sidelines like, oh, and yet on the way home, Dad pulls in and buys Junior ice cream when McDonald's is not having a global IT outage, thanks to the Hamburglar. When little Miss didn't get the results in the exam that she'd worked and studied for and prepped for, and you sit her down and you say to her, sweetheart, you are far more valuable than a score in an exam. When you get the phone call from 21-year-old alive and free who's borrowed the car and phoned you at 2 a.m. to say, I've just crashed the car. Listen to this. Some of you might want to take some notes here, Roderick. Your first question, if compassion is your driving force, is, are you okay? Not, is the car okay? I didn't say, is the karaoke, though the guy that invented karaoke died this week too, by the way. He was 100, not bad. And again, even these examples, missing the goal, not getting the exam result, crashing the car, which might have even been the result of being stupid. Compassion doesn't lead with what you deserve. Compassion leads with the value that a loving father actually sees in you. Now, Jesus told like the ultimate story about how this plays out. In fact, the ultimate story that Jesus told has been called something that the actual title or the theme or the object of the story has made it in its way into our modern vernacular. It's the story that we now call the story of the prodigal son. And so Jesus one day gets asked by this religious expert who was kind of trying to trip him up. Hey, Jesus, what's the greatest commandment in all of the Jewish commandments? Now, by the way, there were 613. And the Jewish people were actually expected to keep all of them. So for someone to be asked, what's the greatest? It's just like, they're all important. But that's, Jesus is like, okay, I can answer that. Here is the greatest of the 613. Love the Lord, your God. And by the way, all of these matter. With all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind. Hello, don't check your brain at the door. And all of your strength. Then he said, and then the other one, it's like, whoa, I just asked for one, you give me two. Yeah, this sits alongside of it. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Oh, okay. The religious guy's like, all right, let me take another swing at Jesus. Who's my neighbor then? Jesus says, there was a young guy and he had an older brother and then his dad was kind of wealthy, had property, so on and so forth. And this young guy says to his dad, who's still alive at this time, by the way, can you give me my share of the inheritance now? I know you're still alive, but I'd like it now. Dad, for whatever reason, gives him his share of the inheritance and Junior runs off and basically starts partying like it's 1999. He's into everything. If it's illegal, he's there. And he's doing it. So much so, he runs out of all of the money. So much so that he started eating the food that pigs ate. This is a Jewish person who aren't even meant to be seen in the same postcode as pigs. This is how desperate things got. Junior one day, hello, came to his senses and he said to himself, my father's servants actually are eating better than I'm eating right now. And he starts preparing this speech. I know what I'll do. I'll go back home to dad and I'll say, listen, I'm not worthy to be called your son. Please make me like a servant. And he's preparing that and he starts making his way home. Well, Jesus says that as Junior's getting close to home, his father sees him approaching and his father started running towards him. Now, put yourself in Junior's shoes at this very moment. Dad knows what he's done. The stories would have come back. Have you heard what your son's been up to? I mean, there wasn't social media, but there was certainly this one. Have you seen, oh my gosh, my son said he was out at the nightclub and he saw your son. And so this young kid has squandered the money. He's disgraced the family's name and reputation. And the dad sees him and the dad starts running to him. I think it's reasonable to think that Junior's like, uh-oh, dad doesn't run. All of a sudden, dad's running. And Junior pivots, and he's out of there. But evidently, Junior knew something about the heart of his father. And Junior kept on making his way to his father, and his father kept on running towards him. Which, by the way, the fact that Jesus used the story of the father running to him, Jewish people, Jewish men, especially wealthy Jewish men, didn't run. It was considered beneath them. It was considered undignified. I pay people to run. I don't run. People run to me. I don't run to them. This image of just how intent the father was to get to his son. Remember, despite what the son had actually done, and did the son deserve punishment, criticism, anger? Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I mean, the dad had worked his life to get that inheritance up. This reputation had been sullied by the son. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to the son, embraced him, and kissed him. And then Junior starts with the speech. And I got to wonder how many times he'd been rehearsing the speech on the journey back to his dad. Dad, I'm not worthy to record yours. When you read this story, it's almost as if the dad didn't hear a word he said. The father didn't act towards Junior based on what Junior deserved. The father acted filled with love and compassion and responded to Junior based on his value to the father. And then there's another side of the story, because here's the thing. When we read these five characteristics of God, they're not only things that God wants us to embrace and us to experience and us to receive, they're also things that God wants us to demonstrate. As Jesus followers, they're kind of our job description, that we would be people who are filled with unfailing love, slow to anger, hello, filled with compassion and mercy. So this one, it's not only that God has compassion for us, but we're invited to show compassion for others. And Jesus told another story, and I'm just not going to spend much time on this, but I want to highlight another story, which is also a story that's made its way into our modern vernacular. We call it the story of the Good Samaritan. Okay. So Jesus starts telling this story. There was a Jewish man. He was on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho, which, by the way, the shortest route was to go through a place called Samaria. But Jewish people didn't go through the place called Samaria, even though it was the straightest route. They would go around the province of Samaria because Jewish people actually considered people from Samaria, Samaritans, to actually be less than humans. Not that they were bad humans, that they weren't even humans. That's the value, that's the level that they despised the people from Samaria. I mean, they sort of thought of them like dogs. And they wouldn't be seen even in the same zip code, even in the same province. They'd go the long way around, even though that was harder, longer, hotter, more expensive. So this guy's on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he gets beaten up. Bad day. Beaten up, everything stolen from him, even the clothes he was wearing, and literally left to die by the side of the road. This is a bad day. The good news is, Jesus is telling the story, the good news is a priest happened to come past. It's like, what? Of course the priest is the hero of the story. Yeah, great. And the priest pretends he doesn't see the man, crosses to the other side of the road like you do in Bunnings when you see someone that you don't want to see. You skip down the next aisle. Oh, sorry, I didn't see you. Yeah, you did. Crossed the road. Well, and then off he went, left the guy there. And okay, so all right, but he's a Jewish priest. They're kind of a big deal. Probably had some important things to do. So we'll give him a free kick, the audience is thinking. Fair enough. All right. Then along came a Levite, not quite a priest, but still up there in the kind of Jewish hierarchy of things. Oh, well, at least the Levite's going to save the guy's day. Remember, it's a Jewish man. He's on team them. Levite sees the man, crosses the other side of the road, keeps on going. Ah, well, he's not as important as a priest, but he probably still had some important things to do. And then along came a Samaritan. A what? A Samaritan. You know, the people that we Jewish people think of as less than humans, as dogs, he came along. Well, it would be fair to think that the audience is like, all right, he's just going to finish him off. I mean, he's not going to cross the other side of the road. He's going to look, is there anything left? Anything left to scavenge? Can I just push this guy a few more times just because I can? Because he's Jewish and I'm Samaritan and we're mortal enemies. Arr. We now call that guy the Good Samaritan, right? Let me show you how Jesus introduced him. This is Jesus. Then a despite, it was just like, he probably didn't say that, but he's just saying it because everyone, that's exactly what the point, yeah, of course he is. Then a despised Samaritan. So the two heroes have left the building. Along came a despised Samaritan. And when he saw the man, he felt compassion for him. Well, that makes sense. What? This guy's now the anti-hero. It's like, we're in bizarro world here. Like the guy that's meant to, like it was probably the Samaritans that beat him up in the first place. This word compassion, like the use in this exact story that Jesus told, this word, because there's various root words, you know, mentioned at the beginning, the one in Exodus is the same root word as womb, like a mother's womb. This is a different root word. This, in fact, this word that's used to describe the that Jesus used to describe the compassion that the despised Samaritan had. The only other time this exact word is used for compassion is when it's used to describe the sort of compassion that Jesus had for people. This isn't lettuce and tomato level compassion. This is straight out of heaven level compassion. And what's important to understand is Jesus' life and ministry was characterized by consistently having compassion for people. And it wasn't their thoughts and prayers. I'll post hashtag pray for them on Instagram. Anytime Jesus felt compassion for people, he did something. He acted. It wasn't, well, we would say if we were rock stars, we would call it more than a feeling. Reese, I expected far more than you from you than a feeling and a smile, but all right. Tough crowd, Reese. Jeez. Reese was up late last night, everybody. So every time Jesus felt compassion, he was moved by compassion and he did something. Well, he then described this despised Samaritan that we now call the Good Samaritan. Going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. And then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn where he took care of him. The next day, he handed the innkeeper 2 silver coins, telling him, take care of this man. If his bill runs higher than this, I'll pay you the next time I'm here. Now, by the way, I preach a whole message around this when people say that God's not interested in money. It's like, you know, one of the superpowers of this Good Samaritan was compassion. You know, the other superpower is that he actually had some financial resources, but he knew they weren't to be kept to himself, but to be used to others. But I don't have time to preach that today. Come back for that next time. But I want to give us a little bit of homework. And this is not just like this week homework. This is this life homework, is pray for opportunities to be able to be like this guy. This is one of those be like Bill stick figure cartoons. Be like the Good Samaritan. This is, but when I say pray, don't just pray for the opportunities. Pray that you'll recognize the opportunities. Don't be the priest. Oh, well, you probably didn't see him. Okay. Unlikely, but all right. Sometimes a colleague in your business sphere needs some compassion from you and we might not recognize it. because we're busy. A family member, your spouse, your kids, and the list goes on. And then just pray for the wisdom. The Good Samaritan gave the Jewish man exactly what he needed. He didn't say, here's the keys to my donkey, good luck. He gave him exactly what he needed. There was insight and specificity to how he expressed his compassion. And that's where the real magic happens.
We really hope you got a lot out of this message. If you live in the Perth area, we'd love for you to join one of our live experiences. For times and directions, as well as information, head to our website, elevatechurch.me. For those of you beyond the Perth area, we'd love for you to connect with our online experience, which premieres every Sunday via YouTube and Facebook Live, and on demand immediately after. And to partner with us to reach more people by giving financially, head to our website, elevatechurch.me, and also download our Elevate Church AU app.